I'd like to present some results from a national survey we recently conducted on pediatric and family medicine physicians' attitudes regarding the new rotavirus vaccine. I have no disclosures. And I'd like to first thank my colleagues that are part of the Vaccine Policy Collaborative Initiative in Colorado and our CDC collaborators, especially Umesh Parashar and Shannon Stokely, that contributed a great deal to our work. As most of you know, rotavirus is a leading cause of hospitalization and death from acute gastroenteritis among children worldwide, especially in underdeveloped countries. Annual U.S. morbidity from rotavirus includes 2.7 million episodes of diarrhea, 500,000 office visits, 55 to 70,000 hospitalizations, and 20 to 60 deaths per year. Total costs of rotavirus infection in the United States are estimated to be over $1 billion per year. The first rotavirus vaccine, RotaShield, was licensed in 1998, but was withdrawn 1 year later because of an association with intussusception. A new live oral rotavirus vaccine, RotaTeq, was licensed subsequently in February of 2006. It is recommended to be given on a three-dose schedule at 2, 4, and 6 months of age. And the timing of doses is fairly strict, with the first dose recommended to be given between 6 and 12 weeks of age, and the third dose by 32 weeks of age. Approximately 1 year after the introduction of the new rotavirus vaccine, we conducted a survey of pediatricians and family medicine doctors nationwide to assess their rates of adoption of the new vaccine, their knowledge of and compliance with ACIP recommendations for its use, their perceived barriers to adoption of the rotavirus vaccine, and their understanding of FDA and CDC post-marketing surveillance reports that were issued in March of 2007. The study was conducted in two sentinel physician networks developed for the Vaccine Policy Collaborative Initiative. These networks were recruited from random samples from the American Academy of Family Physicians and the American Academy of Pediatrics. In prior work, these sentinel works have found to be comparable to physician surveys, to physicians surveyed from the AMA with respect to practice characteristics, physician characteristics, and key vaccine-related attitudes. The survey was pilot tested in a community advisory panel, a group of 6 pediatricians and 6 family medicine physicians from throughout the United States, and was administered by mail and internet during August through October of 2007. Respondents who practiced less than 50% time in primary care practice were excluded. Response rates were 84% in peds, 79% in family medicine. Family medicine physicians who don't see infants less than 6 months were excluded, so our final total population was 623. Respondents did not differ from non-respondents with respect to sociodemographic factors, region of the country, practice setting, or location. This shows characteristics of the two populations of pediatricians and family medicine. I just want to point out a few expected findings. The majority of both groups are in private practice settings, which is what we'd expect, with more family medicine docs also in hospital or clinic settings. And we see the expected differences in distribution with more pediatricians in the Northeast, and the South, and more family medicine docs in rural areas. These results show the current reported rotavirus administration practices. As you can see, 85% of pediatricians are shown here in yellow bars and family medicine in red. 85% of pediatricians report that they routinely administer the rotavirus vaccine to all eligible infants. 11% do not offer. In family medicine, 45% report routinely administering, and 42% do not offer. This slide shows the strength of recommendation for the vaccine. Again, pediatricians are shown in yellow bars and family medicine in the red bars. And what we see is that pediatricians are overwhelmingly strongly recommending the vaccine, or recommending but not strongly, with very few, only 10% informing but making no recommendation, and only 2% recommending against. Conversely, among family medicine doctors, 22% strongly recommend, 33% recommend but not strongly, 37% inform but make no recommendation, and 8% recommend against. This shows the reported timing of adoption of the vaccine after the ACIP recommendation. And again, you see that pediatricians were more rapidly adopted, with 24% adopting immediately, 39% within 6 months, and only 11% have not adopted. In contrast, family medicine, very few immediately adopted, 27% less than 6 months, and 46% still had not adopted a year after introduction. The attitudes regarding adoption differed quite substantially between pediatricians and family medicine docs. 17% versus 44% of family medicine agreed with the statement, "Rotavirus vaccine is not necessary for my patients." Conversely, 88% of pediatricians and 64% of family medicine docs felt that rotavirus vaccine should be routinely recommended for all eligible infants. Because the specifications regarding the timing of doses are so specific, we also asked them about their knowledge of these recommendations. 69% of pediatricians versus 30% of family medicine docs knew the age by which the first dose should be administered, 12 weeks. Also, we see the same kind of results, twice as many pediatricians, 62% versus 32% of family medicine docs, knew the age by which all three doses should be administered. We also asked them about their perceptions about difficulty following these recommendations. And in response to the statements, "I sometimes have difficulty giving the first dose on time," 22% of pediatricians and 44% of family medicine docs endorsed this. In terms of difficulty giving the third dose, 31% of peds and 46% of family medicine endorsed this. And roughly equal percentages, 41 and 44%, felt that the recommendations for timing of the doses were complicated. Despite the fact that they found dosing intervals difficult to follow, in general, they didn't depart from the recommendations very often. Only 12% of pediatricians and 20% of family medicine docs frequently or sometimes gave the first dose after 12 weeks, and 10% or less of both groups administered the final dose at greater than 32 weeks. This is a list of factors identified as definite barriers to administration of rotavirus vaccine. As you can see, the top three for pediatricians were all related to insurance, failure of some insurance companies to cover the vaccine, the upfront cost to purchase the vaccine, or lack of adequate reimbursement. These same three were very important for family medicine as well, but in addition, they had an additional two factors that were not very commonly reported for pediatricians, including physicians' concern about the safety of the rotavirus vaccine and concern about the addition of another vaccine to the already complex vaccination schedule. I next want to talk about attitudes about the post-marketing monitoring reports that were issued in March of 2007. This report concluded that post-marketing surveillance data did not suggest an association of the Rotatec vaccination with intussusception, and reaffirmed the vaccine policy recommendations to routinely vaccinate U.S. infants with rotavirus vaccine. The following slides will present results among physicians who had heard or read this report. 91% of pediatricians stated that what they understood about the report The majority of pediatricians responded that the number of cases of intussusception did not exceed the number expected by chance. Compared to pediatricians, there were more family medicine docs who were either uncertain or believed that the report indicated that the number of cases of intussusception exceeded the number expected by chance alone. ''88% of peds and 79% of family medicine docs did not alter practice based on these reports. So very, very few people actually altered their practice, but 11% of family medicine docs and 3% of pediatricians did stop giving the rotavirus vaccine. Finally, we asked the physicians about their attitudes towards the reports. In general, the majority of physicians somewhat or strongly agreed that the messages were communicated clearly, were reassuring, and were helpful. However, about a third of the physicians in both groups felt that the report should not have been publicized. More family medicine docs, about 58%, felt that the reports increased physicians' their own concerns about the rotavirus vaccine safety. 56% of family medicine versus 37% of peds felt that the reports increased parents' concerns, and 42% of family medicine versus 20% of pediatricians thought that the reports had decreased parental acceptance of the vaccine. I want to point out a couple of important limitations to this type of survey work. There's always the potential for bias in those who choose to respond to surveys. And in addition, all of the data I've told you is based on self-report rather than actual practice. So in conclusion, 85% of pediatricians and 45% of family medicine physicians currently routinely offer the new rotavirus vaccine to all eligible infants. Family medicine physicians were more likely than pediatricians to inform patients about the vaccine but not make a recommendation. The attitudes of pediatricians and family medicine physicians about the vaccine differ, with family medicine physicians more often reporting that rotavirus vaccine is not a necessary vaccine and that it should not be routinely recommended. Knowledge regarding timing of doses of the rotavirus vaccine is twice as high among pediatricians than among family medicine. Both specialties report difficulty complying with recommended timing of the doses and feel the recommendations are too complex. As with other new vaccines, concerns regarding reimbursement, upfront costs, and inadequate reimbursement are perceived as the major barriers to implementation in both specialties. However, family medicine also has substantial concerns regarding vaccine safety and about adding another vaccine to an already crowded immunization schedule. FDA and CDC post-marketing surveillance reports were understood by most physicians and were thought to be reported clearly. Compared to pediatricians, however, more family medicine physicians reported increased vaccine safety concerns and decreased parental acceptance of the vaccine due to the reports. There are a lot of implications of these data, but two of the major ones, I think, are that financial barriers to adoption of rotavirus vaccine must be addressed for both specialties, and that adoption among family medicine physicians is slower and less uniform, suggesting the need to more actively address the barriers they perceive. Thank you.
Thank you, Allison. We have a couple minutes to take a few questions about this presentation.
Hi. I'm Carolyn Cook from Mary Bridge Children's Hospital in Tacoma. And I was wondering if you had thought about doing a study in a universal distribution state, which we have, where costs are not a concern at all, and looking at acceptance when you don't have the cost factor.
Actually, the data we have, we can divide by type of state. We haven't done that yet, but we can. In some other studies that we've done, we have seen differences depending on the purchase, the type of state. Excuse me? Yes. I mean, clearly the financial barriers are a huge issue with all of these new vaccines. Everyone that we've surveyed about, that has come out at the, as the top three.
Because we still have, even though it's universal distribution, we still have slow uptake of the vaccine.
Even among pediatricians? Or both?
Pediatricians are better. They're fairly practiced, just like your study. And that's just anecdotal information.
In your state, I'm sorry, Oklahoma, did you say?
Washington.
Oh, Washington, sorry.
Can I respond to that? We actually have a policy barrier that's interfering with our
In Washington?
Yeah.
No. Do you want to explain that? Please.
A lot of practices in our state use medical assistants as a common terminology, but certified healthcare assistants to administer vaccines. There was a law in our state, the scope of practice did not include oral vaccines. I'm happy to say that this legislative session, that law was changed, the scope of practice has been increased, but that's had a significant impact on the uptake of that vaccine.
I'm so sorry, thank you so much.
Thank you, that's interesting.
Can I ask you a quick question, Ali, before Haley you come on? I think your data clearly showed that both the level of adoption and timing of adoption for the family medicine group was delayed relative to pediatricians. Can you suggest some possible explanations why we are seeing these large differences?
Yeah, I think we're seeing, since we started looking for them, I think we're seeing them with every new vaccine. And I guess when I worry about when I present this data, I think it's very important to look at these things, but I worry about sounding like I'm saying pediatrician good, family medicine bad, because that's not at all, of course, the point of this. Family medicine docs are faced with huge difficulty. Immunizations are not necessarily their bread and butter. They're trying to serve the needs of all different ages. They're dealing with multiple competing demands, and they find it very difficult and often a lot more expensive because they don't do the volume of immunizations. They often haven't developed the administrative or, you know, managerial shortcuts that a lot of pediatricians have had to develop because of the volume. So I think competing demands, lack of volume, are two of the things that really play into it. And I think we have to have a lot of empathy for how hard this is and really just address the barriers effectively.
Okay, we can take one more question.
Last question, thank you. Mm-hmm. It's just a comment. First, thanks for doing it. I found it very, very interesting. And it reminds me that something that Penina said one day, which is or maybe I am misquoting you, but we do have to send the message of whatever we find in our safety research. That's our job. And I said that this morning. On the other hand, we have to be careful in how do we send the message, and we have to be careful in being clear with the message. And I think your study shows us that there is a price to pay for a message that if it is not perfectly well crafted, or if the message is not as timely as it ideally could be. It's going to be it's never going to be perfect, but I think it is important for us to remember that, and I thank you for doing the research and reminding us of that.
Thank you. I actually think that no matter how you craft the message, from what I've seen, we've done a lot of surveys looking at these issues, a certain percentage of the population is going to get it wrong, and the newspapers get it wrong. And in this case, I think that from what Umesh has told me, the CDC was largely trying to repair what the FDA report had made a little less clear. And I think the problem is that the newspapers tend to get a very quick message, and If it's complicated, it may not translate well. And frankly, it's not really news to say, looks like we don't have a problem. And so that if there's a report with an exclamation point that says, we don't really have a problem, that's going to likely be misinterpreted. And that's sort of what I think happened here.